this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And today I am so honored to welcome to Joy on Paper, Frederick Branfon. The name of his book is Intimate Strangers, and he is a brilliant scholar. Intimate Strangers, A History of Jews and Catholics in the City of Rome. For a scholarly book, it is one of the loveliest reads, and I am so honored to welcome you to the program today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. Thank you so much for that introduction, really.
I love scholarly books. That's my main focus in life. So I tell you, when I got this book and I started reading it, I said, oh my goodness, the writing is so clear, so beautiful, and everybody who is interested in history should read this book because you cover a very important time over many, many, many years and a subject that reaches out and has tentacles all around the world. Tell us about Intimate Strangers. I think it's an amazing book.
Well, thank you very much. The book really is about the history of Jews and Catholics in the city of Rome. And it starts, really before the Catholic Church was established in 139 BCE, when there was a Jewish community in Rome, very small and fairly obscure. We don't know too much about it. And the book traces the history of the relationship between Jews and Catholics up until roughly today, when I put my pen down. And so there's quite a bit of time covered there. I enjoyed every minute of it when I was reading about it and writing about it. And I put together the book according to a certain theme. And the theme is that these two communities, the Jewish community, which is a small community in Rome, and the Catholic community, which grew to be, of course, an international organization but was centered in Rome, lived together for roughly 2,000 years. And, of course, there was time when it was quite an adversarial relationship. There were Talmud burnings, and there was ghettoization, and the Jews were oppressed during that time, those times. But there were other times, when if you look at how they related to each other, it was almost like a family snapshot. And they treated each other as family. They couldn't be family. Both Jewish law and Catholic law forbade Jews and Catholics from marrying, but they talked about each other as if they were family. And I think I said something about that they bump up against the limits of family. And over the years, this relationship developed. And like any family, as I said before, it was dysfunctional from time to time. But during World War II, what I noticed, when the chips were really down and the Jews of Rome were in deadly peril, many, many Catholic institutions and families stepped up to the plate and saved thousands of Jews. And then after World War II, there was a real reconciliation between Jews and Catholics. And on the cover of the book, there's a picture of Pope John Paul II and Elio Saaf, who is a former chief rabbi of Rome.
Well, I love that picture. When I said that it has so much meaning, because when we're talking about Jews and how they're scattered all over the world, and when we focus on what went on in Rome, because it was a center point for so much of Jewish life. It really has touched Jews all over the world. And I myself have been, of course, to Rome many times. I love it. I've been to the ghetto. So explain, how is there still some place called the ghetto, which most people will think is a word nobody uses anymore?
Yes. Well, it's where the people call it the ghetto. They do. They call it the ghetto. Of course, it's not a ghetto anymore, but it's where the ghetto once was. Rome was a walled city. It was a city surrounded by a wall, and in 1555, Pope Paul IV decreed that all Jews in Rome should live in a restricted area that was itself surrounded by an inner wall, and Jews could live in that ghetto They have to. They're able to go out and work in the other areas of Rome during the day, but at night, when the sun went down, they had to be locked inside the ghetto. And of course, when they went out to work during the day, their only job that was allowed them was rag picking, collecting secondhand cloth and making it into mattresses and pillows and maybe some shoddy clothing as well. But now, of course, the ghetto was the longest-lived ghetto in Rome. It was the longest-lived ghetto in Europe. It was founded in 1555, dismantled in 1870. So there was quite a bit of time, hundreds of years, when Jews were forced to live in this ghetto. But now, it is just an area in Rome. If you get in a cab, you ask them to take you to the ghetto, they know exactly where to take you. But, of course, it's an area in Rome which is a center of Jewish life in Rome. The central synagogue is there, and a great many of kosher eateries are there, things like that. It's a wonderful place to be.
Oh, it is. It is. when you go there, the food is great and absolutely wonderful. As you said, Jews were limited in what they were supposed to be doing, but Jews did a lot in Rome. Tell us about some of the interactions on the financial side and how Jews within those walls and with the arts, the relationship to the artists of that period.
Yes, well, first of all, prior to the institution of the ghetto, Jews lived all over Rome, and that was, in the 1400s, 1300s. They were very much a part and wanted to be a part of the intellectual life of Italy in the 1300s and the 1400s. And, they were very familiar with Italian poetry, Dante's Inferno. They were very familiar with the work of Michelangelo, Michelangelo's Moses, that was sculpted in Rome. And they were able to get Catholic artisans to make the metal and gold, silver fixings for the synagogue. And one of those persons was Benvenuto Cellini, who was a very famous artist. So they were totally involved. And in fact, there are certain Jews, wrote their own Jewish version of the Divine Comedy. And Jews translated the Divine Comedy into Hebrew and things like that. And that was the cultural side of it. Now, in terms of the financial side, of course, Jews were permitted to lend money. They were Catholics, by the way. This was a gray area, really, in any society, and especially, let's talk about the 1500s, capitalism was something that was on the horizon. The world was turning from a feudal society to a capitalistic society, and people needed cash, sometimes small amounts of cash, sometimes large amounts of cash. Jews did not supply large amounts of cash to anyone. If you wanted to send a boat to the New World, Jewish money was not financing that expedition. But if you had a farm, or if you had a dairy or something like that, Jews would finance that, bridge loans or whatever it is, allow you to pawn or pledge some of your items, and they were able to do that. Now, this, of course, was regulated by papal law, on the one hand, the Pope, did not want it to happen at all, but what we say is that the Pope really loved liquidity in terms of financial liquidity, more than he hated lending. So they were able to do so. The number of banks that they called banks, we wouldn't call them banks today, we really call them pawn shops. But the number of pawn shops or banks in the ghetto was regulated by papal order and was negotiated, because Jews wanted there to be more banks, the Pope wanted there to be less banks, and this had to be negotiated. And eventually the Pope then established his own bank in Rome, but they didn't provide any interest. If you put your money in a papal bank in Rome, it was probably safe, but it's no interest accrued. In a Jewish bank, interest accrued. So the business model for the Catholic banks in Rome needed a little tweaking.
you write about all of this so beautifully. This book is so much fun and filled with anecdotes and stories and just information that people have not heard about. We don't have very much time. Actually, I'm going to invite you back because I need more time with you. I love this book. And I want to promote it as a wonderful book for everybody to read, but also especially for authors, because they really will find, I mean, this is like a source of material for, I could come out with like 20 novels just based on this book. So just let's quickly talk a little bit about the Arch of Titus and the Jewish catacombs, and we will then finish today, but I'm going to have you back, okay?
Well, I would love to. How could I not want to come back? Look at this thing. How could I not want to come back? Of course I'll come back.
Okay. So talk about the Jewish catacombs.
Well, you know, the catacombs are burial sites. And we take it for granted, but, you know, in Rome at the time, and we're talking about the 2nd century A.D. or C.E., and the 3rd century A.D. or C.E., the Jews were allowed to have their own burial ground. Of course they could have it, and they did. When we say burial grounds, they were buried in caves. The caves were rock cut; they were man made. There was a hill here, or a hill. There are none of them surrounding the city of Rome, and they would, you know, with the axe and chisel, they would cut passageways through the rock. And along the passageways, there would be burial niches where Jewish men and women were buried. And there was usually, you know, a sign or something that allowed you to see their name and or what their profession was, who their parents were, things like that. And these Jewish catacombs were rediscovered. They were abandoned about the 4th century CE, but they were rediscovered in the 19th century, in the early 20th century. Unfortunately, you can't go to them. They are, I was very lucky to be given a private tour of the catacombs, but the average visitor to Rome can't go. One of the catacombs is being restored so that tourists can go there. And this is Bologna catacombs. They're covered with wall paintings and inscriptions, and all the remains of the humans have been removed. And these catacombs in Torlonia are underneath the Torlonia Palace. And the Torlonia Palace was where the fascist dictator Mussolini lived during his time as a dictator. And he lived right on top of a Jewish burial ground.
Wow.
Sort of incredible, but he did.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's so much. I think right there I could write a novel about somebody haunting Mussolini. I mean, we could just do a fantastic novel.
Go ahead.
I think so. That's why I think this book is so relevant and so important for people to read. And anybody going to Rome, you must read this book because you'll want to carry it around with you as probably Kindle version because it's a heavy book, but it is beautifully written. Really, really fantastic. Frederick Branfon, so you're going to come back because what I want you to do is talk about not just your book, but how you did the research, because you are a fantastic researcher, okay?
Absolutely, please, I would love to.
Okay.
I would love to give credit to all the people I read and enjoyed reading. Absolutely.
Good. Well, I will send you an invitation. And meanwhile, people, get this book, Intimate Strangers, A History of Jews and Catholics in the City of Rome. It's by Frederick Branfon. It is a great book to read. I mean, you will not ever think that you're reading a scholarly book because, boy, oh boy, when you get into it, you can't stop reading. I just wanted to know more and more and more. So thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, Frederick, and we'll have you back soon, okay?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye now.